Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we're going to talk about some Disney things.
Yes,
we're going to talk about some scary Disney things.
We're going to talk about some obscure Disney things.
Yes. We're doing Black Cauldron this week. And Black Cauldron was the first Disney animated theatrical feature to ever receive a PG rating.
I'm not surprised. So, this is creepy.
Well, yes, actually, it was.
No. I think that actually The Rescuers scared me more than this, or was creepier, because it was really, like, realistic. Like,
yeah,
a kid could totally be kidnapped, and that's very scary, but, like...
But I think you at this age could see that, but, like, a wee child who hasn't quite figured out reality and fantasy, this would be kind of terrifying.
I agree.
And actually, cuts had to be made to it so it wasn't R.
Really?
And I was like, oh my.
R? What the hell did they have in there?
I don't know. And it might have had to do
PG-13 altogether.
No. Well, that's the thing, is it might have had to do with this movie was in production for like 12 years.
Right.
So, you know, at some point they might have done something before PG-13 existed.
That's true.
Okay. So, I don't have the exact date where they submitted it initially, but... Yeah. At some point, it had to be edited twice, once to avoid an R rating and once to avoid a PG-13 rating.
Okay.
So
yeah, that was probably before.
Yeah. But it did, it finally came out 1985, July 24th, 1985, and is based on the book series by Lloyd Alexander.
Yep.
Which, in turn, is based on Welsh mythology.
Which is why everyone's names are so crazy.
Which is why I remember the first... I think the first book in the series is called Book of Three.
Yeah.
The first Black book Cauldron is actually...
And then Black Cauldron, yeah.
Is the second one. So I remember reading Book of Three as a kid and just... It's like, this is... this is ridiculous.
Like Hermione.
Yep. Yeah, it's come back to haunt me later in life. Trying to read funny magic names. So I noticed at the end of this movie, I don't mean to jump straight to the end right away, but
jeez, Joel.
It actually says that this book is based on the Chronicles of Peridon instead of specifically on the Black Cauldron. Because the first half of this movie is totally just the Book of Three.
Yeah. Because if you just jumped straight into the Black Cauldron, it would make no sense.
Yes. So, other just interesting things about it. This was the first Disney movie, I believe, to have a video game based on it.
Cool.
So,
I want to play the moving Black on Cauldron into modern video times. Game. That sounds awesome.
Black Cauldron video game. Okay, so there were some, I found some references to Mickey Mouse video games and Donald Duck video games before this, mm-hmm. like for the Atari and stuff.
Yeah.
But this is the first one to be based on a Disney movie
instead
of just a Disney property. For those of you out there who like really obscure old video games, it was pretty much resembled the King's Quest series, which is a point-and-click kind of adventure.
Yeah.
So I think that really lends itself to fantasy world kind of things.
Yeah.
Also, this is the first movie, I believe, that we've talked about that has a negative score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Man. So, including all the package films?
I think so. I think because of the way Rotten Tomatoes works, a lot of the reviews for older movies are like, you know, retro reviews that these people have written. Just because of their love of that movie.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to write a terrible review about a really old movie, but a lot of people writing reviews, wrote a lot of, you know, ambitious but flawed kind of reviews for this movie. Tim Burton was a conceptual artist on the film.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, if you know that going into it, you can really see a lot of Tim Burton influence. I mean,
there are no, like, black and white stripes or aimless swirly things, but there's definitely, like, creepy stuff that seems very much his style.
Yes. And, as I mentioned before, this movie was in production for 12 years and 5 years in actual production, but they'd been working on it for 12 years. So there are like cut versions somewhere in Disney Vault areas that where Don Bluth tried making this movie, mm-hmm. and a couple of the Nine Old Men took stabs at a version of the Black Cauldron. So I don't think anything ever got to animation stage, but I would really like to see what they did.
Yeah.
And kind of what was going on there. But let's start, jump into the movie.
No opening credits. This is the first
no movie opening credits.
To not have opening credits.
Yep.
And that's mostly a time period thing, right? Like, maybe you should stopped having opening credits at some point. So I guess we hit that point.
Pretty much.
So that's cool. I don't mind sitting through credits, but it is really nice to have them at the end.
Yeah.
Just because that's what I'm used to.
Yeah, it pretty much it feels like a movie more.
Yeah, basically. So,
but yeah, it opens up on grim, angry clouds.
Angry clouds.
That's happened 2 movies in a row now.
Yep. And then we get this cute little cottage. It goes from, like, the angriest of clouds.
Well, the clouds work with all this, like, backstory narration.
Oh, yeah, there's narration,
That had to pretty much tell the story of the cauldron, and so there's this evil king who's basically really evil, and he's feared by all the gods. And so he's trapped into the Black Cauldron.
Oh, no, not the Horned King. Not the Horned King.
Apparently there's
all these evil kings wandering around.
Evil kings just hang out in Welsh countrysides all the time.
Apparently.
So this cauldron has been lost to the ages, but pretty much every bad guy in history is looking for this cauldron to be able to raise an army. And it basically sounds like an Indiana Jones story.
Basically, yeah.
But yeah, then we get the title, and it's a really pretty title with really majestic music behind it.
The music in this movie was weird, because sometimes it was really good, and sometimes it was terribly ill-placed. But, like, this music right here was totally awesome, and I was excited to watch a movie.
I found the music very helpful because it would let me know before the scene started if this is going to be a delightful, happy scene taking place on a farm or a really scary, terrifying scene taking place in a cursed castle.
Well, that's good.
And so, like, right at the beginning of the scene, I was like, well, that music is for terror.
That no seems problem scary. Let's go with scary.
Yes.
But then, yeah, we get the cute little cabin in the woods. After all of this serious creepiness, cute little cabin.
Nice cabin. We meet Taran, who is an assistant pig keeper, who wants to be a great warrior. Really, really standard
humble beginnings, motif.
Destined for greatness kind of thing.
Yes.
And
his mentor, what's his face? I totally didn't write down his name.
I didn't write down his name. He's not in this movie very much.
Oops. So, the old guy.
I'm gonna call, yeah, the old guy, the Ben Kenobi.
Yeah,
of this movie.
Okay. And they're having a conversation about Taran wanting to go out and see the world. And the old dude's like, you gotta go feed the pig, sorry.
Yeah, Taran's really worried that all the fighting in the world is gonna be over before he gets a chance to go out there. And my first thought was, not only is that not gonna happen, but you can start the fights. It's not like you can go up and then,
you don't have to wait for someone to attack you.
I mean, you won't be the good guy of the story anymore, but if, like, wanting to be in fights is your aim, you can do that. That's not a, it's not a limited thing.
Yep.
But, yeah, he goes to feed and bathe the pig.
His name is
Henwen.
I loved Henwen. She was so cute. And for a movie that lacks a lot in happy, cute things, Henwen was awesomely cute.
Yes, that's about all they had. But they really shoved all that they could into this one little tiny pig.
And she's so cute.
There's this scene where he's just kind of daydreaming about being a hero. He fights with the animals.
Yep.
you know, having a good time, pretty carefree.
Then Henwen starts to freak out.
Yes. Right, go crazy, right in the middle of her bath.
So, they bring her inside, and the old dude, I feel really bad for not remembering his name now, for how much we have to talk about him, he's like, oh, well, you know, it's getting a vision. And he's like, what? And so they put her head in this bowl, and it's like basin of water.
So, I don't remember any backstory about Henwen in the books. I don't know if they go into detail later in the series, but there's no explanation in the movie, at least, why Henwen has the power to turn water into a crystal ball, basically.
Well, in the book, and once or twice in the movie, they refer to her as an oracular pig.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be just like a thing that occasionally happens to an animal, as far as I know. Like, every now and then you get lucky and you have an oracular pig.
And okay.
So, if I remember correctly, I haven't read these books in a very long time. I loved them a lot as a kid, but I don't really remember everything. But if I remember correctly, it was just like random awesome happenstance to have one of these animals.
Well, that's good.
So. But... has this vision.
Which, you know, causes the old guy to get reasonably concerned, and he's like, we have to hide Henwen, and so we have to go on the run. Here's some food out of here. And Tarwin is not very cooperative, and he's kind of sits in the corner and grumps for a little bit. And so he says, I'm not afraid of the Horned King. And I remember that line because I was like, I'm afraid of the Horned King. He's called the Horned King.
Yeah, he's pretty scary. What I still don't understand, and I don't think I understood this as a kid when I was reading the book, is like, he's like, here, 13-year-old boy, you go take the pig to the other cabin next to the creepy woods. I shall stay here and foodle about? Like, what? What is he supposed to be doing that he has to send this 13-year-old off by himself with the super important pig of justice?
I don't know. He also didn't give him very much food.
He gave him an apple and a slice of bread.
And he took out this whole loaf of bread and then cuts off the very end, which is the worst part of a bread anyway.
Yeah.
And gives him that.
I don't understand that.
I don't know what the long-term plan was. But no matter what, he sends him off packing, and I remember thinking, you know, it's a good thing he's a cartoon character, because most people would have to, you know, pack a change of clothes here.
Or at least, like, you know, some extra socks.
Yeah. It's only when they're packing clothes that I really notice, like, their cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Because so much, especially in this movie, there's not a lot of over-the-top fumbling and stuff you attribute in cartoons.
Right.
It's very realistic, or as realistic as a cartoon about fantasy characters and dragons can be.
Yep.
But it really struck me out that he has no extra clothes.
Yep.
So, we get a cutaway scene of the Horned King to introduce that character.
Here is where the score starts to sound ridiculous to me, because the Horned King, we're introduced to the Horned King from him just, like, walking down the stairs, but that score thinks he is killing babies. It is so angry, and I'm like, guys, it's a door, and then it's some feet. Like, it's really not that serious. He's just walking. And that happens again later, where he's just like, sitting there, and they're like, da-da-da! And I'm like, dude, he's just sitting. It's not like he's killing somebody, or... I don't know.
Yeah, the Horned King gets a terror score to go along with him in all of his daily activities.
He could be brushing his teeth, and the music would be like, oh my god!
I am fairly confident that Horned King has never brushed his teeth a day in his life.
That's true.
To see that character, and to see him make his growly face, he is not a toothbrusher.
The Horned King looks to me like pretty much every generic villain in 80s 80s cartoon. He looks a lot like Skeletor.
Yeah.
And from He-Man. And he also looks quite a bit like Mumra from the Thundercats.
I can see that one too.
The whole time I was like, are you going to send your henchmen to do something stupid? Is that what you're... Oh, you're going to do something yourself? That's novel.
He was a very standard, yeah, this is what an evil thing looks like.
It looks kind of like a skeleton. Its eyes glow. It's got creepy teeth. But he definitely has horns, so, you know, that's...
He kind of reminded me of an 80s version of Maleficent.
I can see that, yeah.
Where there's a gender difference, but other than that, I could see if Sleeping Beauty had been made in the 80s, this very much would have been what Maleficent looked like.
Yeah,
and in turn, if they'd gotten around to this movie back in the late 50s and 60s, he would have been much more what Maleficent looked like. So
yeah, there's a lot of similarities in this movie to Sleeping Beauty, I noticed.
Like, yeah.
Alanui looks like a young Aurora to me, even down to the outfit. Like, her clothes look really similar, and her hair looks really similar. She does.
The bad guy has a very rundown castle terror base.
And lots of minions.
Yes.
Who aren't very good at doing anything.
No, who look like little goblins.
Yeah.
So, and, there are similars.
Yeah.
Similarities. But, basically, what this is to do is to introduce us to the concept of the Cauldronborn.
Yeah.
Which is his grand plan. Once he finds the Black Cauldron, you can throw dead bodies in it, and zombies come out.
Basically, yeah.
We then get another crazy music shift, because we got really pleasant music, to see Taran and Henwin walking along the merry path.
Happy forest is happy! Yeah, the landscapes in this movie are either really pretty or really disturbing, but they're really well done. Like, I was very impressed by the backdrops in this movie.
Yes. So Taran daydreams for 5 seconds, maybe.
Then Henwin
is gone.
Oops.
So this search for Henwin has to commence, which results in Taran meeting Gergi, who is pretty much the comic relief character of the movie for the most part.
Which loved Gergi as a child. In the same way that, like, children really enjoy Dobby the House Elf and Jar Jar Binks.
Because
now watching Gergi, I was like, Gergi, shut up and go away. Like, this is so unnecessary and annoying.
What is Gergi? Because
I don't remember if there was, like, a name for him. He's kind of like a monkey.
He's a very short person covered in fur and a mustache.
I don't think he was supposed to be human.
He's not human.
So because he looks kind of like a baby Yeti or Bigfoot.
pretty much.
Some sort of Sasquatch, tiny Sasquatch.
I looked him up on Wikipedia, and it gave me a magical creature. I was like, unhelpful.
I don't think they ever like talked about it in the books, like what kind of creature he was.
Okay. But
he's supposed to be like one of a kind weird thing.
Yes.
Sort of idea.
He can communicate with humans though.
Yes.
And bounces around a lot.
Steals everything,
is largely unhelpful.
Yes.
But tries to be helpful.
Sometimes.
In an utterly unhelpful way though. So yes. He is in the process of stealing the apple, which is pretty much Taran's soul food, his name.
Yeah.
And we hear a pig squeal in the distance, which causes to run. And so this is the scene that I usually see being credited when people talk about how traumatizing and scary this movie is. And it's, to be fair, it is a rather upsetting scene.
Yeah.
Because Henwin is attacked by dragons who basically abducts her into the sky.
Poor
it's
Henwin.
Very stressful. Henwin looks very distressed in this move. In this, a lot of like fast moving low to the ground shots.
Really angry music. Really angry music.
Taran falls down and bleeds, and I didn't go back and check, But I don't think there's been a whole lot of blood in Disney movies before this.
No, that's true. I don't think we've really seen anybody bleed. Not like so, outright. It was on his face, too, so it wasn't just
yes.
Also, I really like the dragons in this. It's rare to see just, like, standard awesome European dragons animated for whatever reason, so it was nice to see them being cool.
Although, the Horned King always referred to him as griffins. I don't know why.
That is not what a griffin is.
They look a lot like dragons to me.
I don't know. But that's another similarity between that and Sleeping Beauty. Dragons hanging out, being cool.
Yep.
Dragons.
We get the dragons flying to the castle in the distance, and Gurgi appears again to basically say, "That's the scary castle.
Don't go in the scary go in this castle. It's a bad plan." Thanks, Gurgi. That's some knowledge that we needed in life.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the castle is so damn close to the forest, and why Taran was sent through the forest that was so damn close to the scary castle to try and avoid the scary castle.
I don't know. I don't know a lot about the geography here, because the castle looks fairly far off in the distance.
But he gets there less than a day.
Yeah, it's a little hop, skip, and a jump, and he's there.
There's a lot of weird geography problems in this movie, because they're pretty much always three steps away from wherever they need to be going.
Yes, I don't know where the initial cabin that they never made it to, that they were supposed to hide Hinwin at, was. Yeah. You know, if that was possibly a different forest, because I don't know how much forest is in this territory.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get to the castle, which is either very close or very far away from where we are.
We're not sure.
No real explanation as to which one, but it's, you know, very scary shot of the castle, lots of scary lighting and
evil looking, very evil looking.
Very evil looking. And so Taran sneaks in and basically is spying on this load of drunken thugs who are all serve as the Horned King's henchmen.
Oh, but before that, there is a dog out of nowhere, and it scared me half to death. Like, I literally jumped when I was watching this movie, because he's spying on this dude who's just, like, chilling at the castle or whatever, and he, like, it's just staring at him, and this dog pops up and starts, like, barking and snarling, and it scared me to death. But yes, then he gets to this, like, banquet thing, which has basically the most delightful 80s version of what they think medieval songs sound like in the background.
Yep.
What appears to be a super chubby version of Esmeralda.
Yes.
She looks so much like Esmeralda.
She does look a lot like Esmeralda.
She looks like
Esmeralda. I didn't think about it, but Esmeralda. You're correct.
Bigger sister, so, basically, yeah.
And they're having pretty much a party that all comes to an end when the Horned King comes in and ruins it for everybody.
He's just a downer, basically.
Yes. Throughout this whole movie.
Yep.
Because he's bringing his scary terror music wherever he goes.
Yeah, apparently. No, they know he's coming in because there is a slight breeze and the creepiest of music. I feel bad for him, because if that's his constant soundtrack, I'd be really angry too.
Yeah. He's not a bad guy. The music just makes him that way.
Awkwardly plays music. He doesn't even just, like, walk in the room. He, like, magically zaps himself into that. There's smoke and stuff, and I just wanted him to be like, "Honey, I'm home." just so overdone for a, like, casually coming home.
For entering a room.
Yeah.
So they bring Hinwin in. And every chain in the castle is being used to keep this pig where it is supposed to be.
She's a tiny pig.
She's a very, like, small pig. She's like the size of a puppy.
Yeah. She's fat, but she's not, like, large. It's not like a giant pig.
No.
And they're like, so we're going to make you, tell us how to define the cauldron, which, like, isn't really how Edwin's visions work anyway, I don't think. I don't think you can just demand for her to show you something.
I don't know how ocular pigs work, but...
Tarn flips out, falls off of the beam that he's on, and then threatens them with a broom.
Yes, he gets captured very easily.
Good job heroing there, Tarin. You are totally meant for this profession.
So, we're unimpressed currently.
Yeah. And the Horned King is like, tell us how to use the pig. And Tarin's like, but I promised I wouldn't. And I'm like, you don't just tell the ultimate evil, like, oh, sorry, I made a promise to some old dude. You're like, oh, yes, of course, let me help you with that pig so that you don't kill me. That would be nice.
Well, it doesn't take much, you know, coaxing. But again, I don't think the Horn King has time for this. He's busy being evil. He's like, no pig? All right, whatever. We'll just kill that pig.
Might as well. But then he freaks out, and the bowl gets knocked over.
This scene is very weird. Odd. Like, it's not very clear what happens, because the Horn King moves closer to the bowl, and I think scares either Tarin or Henwin.
Yeah.
Is what we're supposed to infer from this.
And then the bowl gets knocked over.
The bowl does get knocked over.
And he gets water in his eyes. Was it water? I guess it was water. I don't know. He gets it in his eyes, and for some reason, that just totally flips him out, and he's, like, out of commission for the moment.
Yes. And that's so
weird.
They're like, running away.
Wicked Witch of the West, crap.
And so, this... They wouldn't have gotten very far. They would have been stopped by the thugs almost immediately. Except the dragons decide that they're going to catch them first.
That doesn't work.
Pull their chains away. Yep. Knock over everybody with their restraints that they've been dragging behind them. And then get the restraints caught in the door.
Yep.
So the overzealous dragons really saved the day. Yep. Because if they hadn't existed, this whole movie would be over right now.
And then they reach like a window opening thing, and Henwin can jump out the like 50 feet to the moat apparently and be totally fine. So she gets away, but Tarin doesn't. And
no, they catch Tarin before he can go.
And then they put him in the dungeons, which like consistently throughout this movie they keep putting people in dungeons that they could just kill. Like there's no reason to keep him. They know how the pig works, and like, I feel like the Horned King does not seem overly sympathetic, so why lock him up instead?
I'm not sure. But they don't even chain him to the wall.
No, they just put him in a room.
Which, you know, maybe all the chains were because used up on the pig.
Used up on the pig, can't use the pig chains.
But yeah, he's totally there, which makes it really easy for him to escape.
Yep.
Which he does when, Elwood comes in.
Joel makes up crap to substitute for Alonwe's name.
Alonwe?
Alonwe. I spelled it out in my notes just to remind you.
Phonetically?
Yep. As phonetically as I can spell. And she shows up with her little bauble. I like her little bauble. I had totally forgotten about that.
I remember about that because it reminds me of Navi from Legend of Zelda.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't talk and it's actually useful.
It doesn't talk and it is useful.
So
appearance only.
Yes, far, far more useful object than Navi. But yeah, I agree, it just kind of floats around. Little ball of light that helps.
They don't really explain where it came from.
And they don't really explain where it goes, because that thing shows up and disappears all the time.
It does for like long extended periods of this movie. It's just not there,
and it just shows up when it's useful or when they feel like it. I don't know. So they go through some of the dungeons, and Tarin finds a sword, and this sword is like way too big for him. It's probably his height, and it probably weighs a ton, And he's just nope, lugging it around. Got a sword now. Proper hero time.
Yes, the sword is the king who basically built the castle, and yes, he has an abandoned burial chamber somewhere in the dungeons.
Just sitting around.
And so, also there's this minstrel fellow that they hear.
Fluta?
Yeah, something to that effect.
Fluta Flim. He's got a silly name. He's got an even sillier name than I thought he did, because then I saw it written down and it's got like seven Fs. So, Fluta.
Yeah. He has a lyre.
Yep.
Which I don't know how or why it's bewitched, but it breaks every time he lies.
Yeah, I remember that from the book, but I don't remember why. So I'm not useful at all on that subject.
I remember that not from the book, but from knowing it happened in the book. Whereas, like, when I read the book, it didn't come across that way. Whenever I watched this movie as a kid, it didn't come across that way. But the book was a Battle of the Books book, which is a thing where they ask you questions about the book. And one of the questions was, in which book is there a liar that breaks every time its master lies? And so I was like, okay. So I knew to look for it this time around, and I can see, but it is something you have to infer.
Yeah, and it's not something that's explained.
Yeah.
And they get him out of the room because he's all tied up.
There's this whole extended chase sequence.
And then they
back
get
and forth.
They get to the here's where her bauble disappears the first time, by the way.
Yes.
I noted every time it disappeared and came back, and it's like, bauble? Bauble! There it is.
Well, throughout all this running, they discover that, this sword is magic.
Yep.
And magic in a really helpful way, in that it basically does all the fighting for you.
Yep.
You just kind of hang on to it, and you win.
Yep.
Tarn was pretty much, like, as soon as he figures that out, he's having the time of his life.
Yes.
In this delightful romp that's going about the castle, being free, being fun and fancy free.
Fun and fancy free. But pretty the score much. Still doesn't suggest that. The score is still super serious.
Yes. Lots of very important music. So
they get to this drawbridge, and they're pretty much caught. And there's these dudes, and they're throwing spears at them and stuff. Terrible aim, by the way, as usual for minions.
Yes.
And Elanwy literally makes the most generic damsel in distress pose I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, she looks scared, and I think she even had her hand to her head. Like, oh, it was so ridiculous. Especially because, like, 10 minutes ago, she seemed perfectly competent. But all of a sudden,
she was leading the way throughout the whole escape from the dungeons.
Yep.
Because the whole escape from the dungeons, she's like, you can come along if you want. And Tarn goes, can I? And you're like, yes, you can. That's why she said that.
Yeah. So then she's aimlessly damsel-y for no reason, which is really weird. And Tarn uses the sword, and they break the drawbridge, and they're able to run away.
Yes. All three of them get away and escape, I guess, to the safety of the forest. This is... The dragons are sent after them.
Yes.
But, and they're supposed to follow him, and when he finds the pig, get him.
Yeah.
So.
Where do they think they're going? There's never a discussion of, we gotta go do this, until like 10 minutes from now?
I don't know. I mean, I assume right now is just a... get away from
the dodge.
There's sharp things being thrown at us, and law of averages, something's gonna hit somebody eventually.
Yep.
So, but once they get in the forest, they don't talk about what's our next step. They spend a lot of time talking about, man, we were really cool back there, weren't we?
Remember that time that I hit things with a sword?
Get in an argument.
Yeah, they get in an argument, and Gurgi shows up. And there was one line in this movie that made me really laugh really hard. And it was, he shows up for a while, and Illanoi says that he's charming, and he responds, and pungent, too! That made me laugh really hard. And I probably didn't understand that joke as a kid, but it did make me laugh really hard. It's such a stupid joke, but it's so funny for some reason. Oh, delightful. Yeah.
Gergi's come back. He's back to stealing stuff. He tries to take hats and the lyre.
Yeah.
And, but then when they're about to banish him again, he brings up that he saw some pig tracks.
Yep.
So we're going to go follow the pig tracks.
And there's this,
and they get to this pond. And this whirlpool comes out of nowhere.
Nowhere at all. And they fall down this hole. There's like a cave under the whirlpool, and it's full of fairies. And they call this, them little people, I think.
I have no memory of this part from a kid. It's like a deleted scene.
This part
that they tucked back in.
Totally not useful. It gives them a direction, but they could have just like discussed it among themselves. There was like this entire like 10-minute segment was so not.
I mean, I guess it gives them a guide.
But he totally leaves.
He does. Like, he's not really helpful. Quickly. Like it could have been just been easily solved as one of them saying, "Well, I know how to get to."
Yeah, like I've heard that place. The cauldron is here, sort of thing. There's a bunch of fairies and they're really cute.
Yes.
The king of the fairies is Toodles from Hook, because I recognized his voice and I was like, "Who is that?" He's crazy too.
Is he really?
He's lost his marbles.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. I thought it was the Sultan from Aladdin because they sound really similar, but I looked it up.
I do really, really like, there's this crotchety old yellow fairy.
Yeah.
And I think he's my favorite character in this movie because he's like, you know, there's not a lot of comic relief in this movie.
No.
And then the comic relief that there is really aimed towards children.
Yeah.
Like, it is Jar Jar. And so, this fairy made me laugh a lot, because he did not like having responsibility.
No, he didn't.
And every time, this is my favorite part. He's like, "Oh, now it's my job to remember where the cauldron is."
So, somebody suggests, one of the fairies suggests that they go destroy the cauldron.
Taran suggests, like, "Well, if we know where it is, why don't we just destroy it?"
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why has nobody ever destroyed it?
I know. Why is no
the
one ever
eons of
this
history that this cauldron was supposed to be destroyed in? I guess they do. The fairies do take care of Henwin, so we don't have to worry about her.
But that's
for
so
the rest of the movie.
Weird. Like, the entire point of this movie was protect the pig, and they're just going to aimlessly give it to things that they don't know. Like, "Oh, don't worry about your pig. It can't fly with you. We're gonna take it home for you." Like, how do they know where he lives? Why wouldn't Henwin just go with them?
And that's up so until weird. This point in the movie, the whole point was to get Henwin away from that house.
So,
I don't know.
So
I don't know.
But
they do. They go to the marshy marsh area.
The marshes of Morva. So part of the problem with the Welsh words in this movie is not necessarily that they're Welsh, but the fact that they're Welsh and people don't pronounce them very well. Like, a lot of times things were like mumbled or not said very clearly, and I was like, what was that? That big long word that probably has like 7 F's in it? I don't know. it's the marshes of Morva with a V, not a W, because I thought it was a W. Also, the fairy's name that goes with them is Doli.
Okay.
I wrote it down as like dough as in cake dough or bread dough, and then L-I-E, which is totally not how it's spelled, but that's what I got.
He's my favorite character. I wrote down crotchety old yellow fairy, so you did better than I.
They wander into this marsh and they find this hut.
Yes. Which ends up being the witch's house. But
yes,
they explore it. They find a lot of frogs and a lot of cauldrons.
Yes. And then the bauble comes back.
Yes.
It's magic. And the witches, I thought, were really funny. I thought they were just kind of delightfully weird characters.
But I like the witches.
It bothered me that we never got introductions. One of them has a name. The oldest one is Ordu, but like...
Yeah, she says her name, or one of the other sisters says her name.
But they're just witches, I guess.
Yeah, they're the witches. They're crazy. They like to eat frogs, and they like to turn people into frogs.
I really love that one of the witches decides that the minstrel dude, what is his name? Oh, I totally, like, said this earlier. Why does everybody's name have to be so complicated?
I told you!
I know, I totally forgot that everybody's if this had been, name was
if this
crazy.
Had been Phil and his pig, then
well, like,
it would Tarin be so much
isn't
easier.
That weird. At least it's spelled how it's pronounced. Fluta! His name is Fluta. I love that one of the witches is totally hitting on Fluta the whole time.
Yes.
That makes me laugh.
I like that a lot. And I like this whole madcap sequence where she's trying to flirt with him and this other witch is trying to turn him into a frog and eat him.
And the frog gets stuck in her boobs and it's really funny.
It is really funny, and it was really, really funny when I was a little kid.
Yes, I agree. And so they're like, okay, we know where the cauldron is. And so they ask for a trade. They ask for, like, a bargain.
Yes, they see his sword when he uses it to destroy a lot of other inferior cauldrons.
Yes.
And decide that they want the sword, and they will offer the black cauldron for a trade.
And he gets so uppity about this damn sword. He has had the sword for approximately 10 minutes, and it's been really useful, but, like... He's really attached to this thing for having it for an hour, and he finally consents.
I understand that it's, you know, they've just decided that they're going to go up against the Horn King, and maybe the magic sword that automatically wins every battle would be a good thing to bring with you.
But
so they go through these other things first, where, you know, they offer the lyre, and then this drove me crazy as a kid. Like, I didn't watch this movie a lot as a kid, but every time I did, this one little part drove me crazy. Because Gurgi offers an apple core from the apple he'd eaten earlier. And one of the witches, you know, scoffs at it, but there's this little comical bit where the other one goes, "Wait a minute, that looks awesome," and eats the apple core.
Yeah.
Now, by all reasonable accounts of how bargaining works, they've accepted the apple core as the bargain, and they have to now give them the black cauldron. And it drove me crazy every time that none of them would mention that.
Yeah, I know. I definitely don't think that the witches would say anything, but I don't understand why Gurgi's not like, "Hey, you just ate that. Doesn't that mean that you give me the black cauldron?"
Especially because they're taking this large chunk of the movie to try and not give away the sword.
Yeah.
And here's this amazing loophole that the witches just presented to them, and that's when they're like, "Okay, you can have our sword."
Yeah.
It drove me crazy.
Silly.
Ah.
So then they're like, okay, so they made the deal and the witches do this big fluffy cloud, angry wind thing.
Magic.
And they earthquake. Do magic. And then,
they reveal
the black cauldron like, out of the ground. And at then which they're point... like, oh, hey, by the way, it's indestructible. Okay, bye.
Yes.
The
thing is, so they say, you know, so it's indestructible, which harkens back to when we were early going, why has nobody destroyed this before? Yeah. But then they bring up the evil powers can be destroyed if someone willingly gets in the cauldron, but they die, and that's the price they have to pay. And so that's a price, but if this is the most evil cauldron of all time, endless evil, I can't believe that one person in all that time is like, you know what, I've lived a good life, I'm going to save the universe by hopping in the cauldron.
I totally was like, Fluta, you're the oldest. Shouldn't you be like, saving mankind is more important than the next, like, 20 years of my life? He looks like he's 70. So, like...
And this is medieval times.
Yeah, so, you know, he should be dead already.
So, I don't know. Yeah, so the next whole scene is them all sitting around feeling totally beat because... none of them wants to climb in the cauldron.
Yep.
Which is, you know, kind of understandable, but still, all of mankind here.
Seriously. And then Dolly gets grumpy and wanders off.
Yes.
That's what happens. He's there for like 10 minutes. Super useful.
Well, we get this, like, evolution into a tender moment where they're like, oh, we had a good time and I'm really glad that you all were my friends and it's been okay.
Which is just, like, weird because I still feel like part of the biggest thing that bothered me about this movie was I still feel like the characters don't really know each other very well. So when they have these, like, moments of, like, oh, you were such a great friend, and I really valued our time together. I'm like, you were together for, like, the past 20 minutes. And I don't really believe the attachment you have to each other. And I guess in the book, it was a lot better because there was, like, you know, more time to wander and stuff. And stuff like that. But, like, in the movie, it's like, I mean, it's nice that you guys get along, but I really don't think you're that attached to each other.
There is no indication of time passing. It's the same thing where we don't know how far away stuff is. This is the first time that there's a campfire or any kind of indication that they are there for an extended amount of time. This still feels like, you know, going back through the movie, this could reasonably be the same day that they escaped.
Yeah.
Depending on how far away stuff is, and we don't know how far away stuff is. So they could have been traveling for a month to 8 months to get to this marsh. Or it could have been, like, jump over this creek, and there's your marsh.
Ta-da!
But
yeah. So these tender moments aren't very convincing to me, to be honest.
Well, this one is interrupted by lots of dragons and thugs.
So that's good. Dragons and thugs. And everyone, they get captured, and then they take the Black Cauldron. Except for Googie,
who runs away.
Yep. But, yeah, the annoying thing is that if they had not gone looking for the Black Cauldron, had not found the witches, and had not drug it up from wherever it was, then they probably never would have found the Black Cauldron, or at least not found it so easily, because it was just, like, chilling there. They did nothing to hide that thing.
Yeah. They might should have, like, when they knew that they couldn't destroy it, maybe put a branch over it or something.
At least something like that.
So that dragons flying overhead wouldn't be like, oh, look! That's a very blackish-looking cauldron, if I do say so myself.
I do hope this is the correct blackish-looking cauldron, yes. So they get captured, and they're all tied up again. Again, not killed. He has the cauldron, and he's ready to resurrect his evil army or whatever, and he still doesn't kill them for no good reason.
Well, this is the thing, is, like, this is the very standard, I want you to see my victory.
Monologuing.
Eminent rival. But nothing about the Horned King gives the indication that he's that kind of character.
No.
And part of it is because he's not in the... Physically, he's not in the movie very much. But he is, like, frequently present in that they talk about him a lot. And he is the overarching threat to this whole movie. But he's not in it much, and when he is in it, he doesn't talk a lot. He just kind of stands there as an evil presence.
With really angry score.
He has angry score, and he is put up, he is displayed as the most evil thing Disney has ever created and dared to put on the screen. We see in other instances where he's like, that pig's no good to me, no, come on. Let's work out a deal. And that's like, nope, we're killing the pig. That's fine. So while I understand as a standard villain, he should be like, now you shall witness my triumph. Yeah. Nothing about him indicates that.
No character motivation that makes that seem plausible at all.
Yeah.
So they're tied up for no reason. And they got to put the dead guy in the cauldron. And this is really creepy.
This, I can see this being very visually scarring to small children.
This and there's a scene at the end that are both really creepy that stuck out to me as like, oh, okay, we're going in that direction then.
I think this was the creepiest scene of the whole movie. because, like, the cauldron starts bleeding.
Yeah.
And, like, skull fire comes out of it.
Yep. Yep.
And these, like, really rise from the dead things.
Yep.
Are happening. It's an intense, intense, creepy scene.
So, yeah, like, this whole cauldron bit is really creepy, but then there's just Gurgi. Gurgi just shows up in the castle trying to find them, and I'm not really sure why. I guess he just ran away in the first place to go save them or whatever. He just pops in and out as he damn well pleases, basically.
I mean, I'm assuming it was a thing where he always, you know, he always runs away whenever the going gets tough in this movie.
Yeah.
And so this can be his shining hero moment.
Yep.
Redeeming quality thing. Because he sneaks in and frees them.
Yes.
And
I have a question.
Yes.
And I don't think that there is an answer to this. But how the hell did the Horn King figure out how to resurrect people with the cauldron?
I'm assuming some ancient texts from somewhere.
I guess so. He doesn't seem like the reading type, considering we don't know how his eyes work.
True. True that. His eyes do change a lot.
They're very weird.
Yeah, I'm giving it some kind of, something that, like, the narrator mentioned that maybe you learn in Horned King school.
Yes.
Well, he does, you know, when it starts working, he seems really excited. Yes, it's working. The rumors were true.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of thing like that.
So then,
Taran is trying to jump into the cauldron.
Yeah.
He's going to sacrifice himself now that there is actual evil undead armies on the rise.
And the thing about the evil undead armies is they keep on talking about this war, and I have yet to see any sort of opposing forces or any actual battle other than them trying to kill a pig and a kid. Like, I don't know how much of a war this is as an attempt at, you know, like, killing an entire kingdom.
Well, I don't know what the Horned King is king of. Is he, you know, is he the current king of the territory, or is he the king of evil, or does he just call himself the Horned King because he wants to be king, like Lord Zedd called himself Lord, even though he really didn't have anything going for him?
It's true. I don't know. It's very weird that there's no actual battle, because there's a lot of talk about war, but it's not war if there's only one side.
I don't know.
But yeah, they're having this, like, existential crisis, like, Taran, don't throw yourself in the cauldron moment. And then Gurgi's like, oh, I'll throw myself in the cauldron. Okay, bye.
Gurgi beats him to it.
Yep.
So, throws himself in.
The army falls apart.
Yes.
And
they all fall down, and so...
There's this weird thing that happens with the cauldron, where it's got, like, this weird vortex happening for no reason.
Yeah, so it starts to, so the evil, quote unquote, evil forces have been kind of like seeping out of the cauldron.
Yeah.
And now they start seeping in reverse. And
yes.
Taran, you know, while everybody's running away, Taran tries to go and see if there's still a chance to save Gurgi.
Yeah.
And starts getting sucked in and pulled to the cauldron. And so meanwhile, the Horned King has been looking out the window and see all of his forces fall down.
So
he goes to the cauldron to see what's up with that.
And then Taran, like...
There's this scene, and this is my favorite thing as a kid, where the Horned King just got, like, really grumpy at these dead corpses, and he starts shaking one. He's like, get up! Go and fight and kill! And it always was... It was the funniest part of the movie as a kid. To see just, like, this epitome of evil be like, come on! Get up! Out of bed!
My favorite part is he goes back down to the dungeons to fix things, and Taran, like, lightly shoves him, like, not even, like, any sort of force behind him, and he starts getting sucked towards the cauldron, and it's just so, like, oh, okay, so this entire movie, we are being told that this is the most evil dude in the world, and he's essentially destroyed by a shove and a pot. And that's really funny to me.
Well, So this vortex, and it's, you know, it's pulling them towards the cauldron, but not so much that they can't, like, fight back against
the tug away. Like, he's not even running or anything.
It's like, yeah, there's the heavy wind, but they're not tumbling around. But then, you know, the Horn King throws Taran close to it, but it clearly, like, at least to me, it clearly selects the Horn King to pull in. And there's this zoom in on the face carving that's on the Black Cauldron. And, you know, we were told at the beginning that that's pretty much, that's the spirit of the evil king. Yeah. So I don't know why this evil guy is making a point to destroy this other evil guy and leave the good guy there.
No, I don't know. But then this is the other really creepy scene where the Horned King essentially gets all his, like, flesh ripped off by the cauldron.
Yeah, he does get pulled apart as he dies. And so then they escape the castle.
But I like that he kept his horns. So his horns were, like, actually a natural part of him, because it kind of looked like they were part of his hat. So it was nice to see that they were actually, like, bone.
In his skull. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a fairly dramatic escape sequence where with a boat and falling pillars.
That whole thing was so unnecessary. And, like, it was like 5 or 10 minutes of just pointless struggle against this gate and then this pillars falling and stuff. And
it wasn't that long, but it did seem a long time after, like, we've killed the bad guy.
Right.
And, you know,
and it just seemed awkward. Like, there's a whole lot of aimless struggle against, like, stupid material possessions. Curse this gate. We are having more trouble with it than the main villain.
If only a shove and a pot were here, this gate would be no match for us.
We are so good at mild shoving and evil pots. So
they get out and they're free. The castle explodes.
Pretty much.
And then the pot, the cauldron, because it's indestructible, kind of floats up. And the witches come back to say, you know, you, like, can't do anything with the pot.
Somewhere in there, apparently their boat flipped upside down. Because when they come out of the castle and they're on, like, the lake, they're on the bottom of the boat. Like, the boat's flipped upside down.
Yes, the boat did flip upside down in the wave-esque thing.
We didn't really see that. So I was like, are you guys just really bad at boats? Like, when did this happen?
So the witches come back, try and take the cauldron back. And then, you know, I guess being wiser for their travels, our heroes are like, wait a minute. What's this bargaining thing we heard so much about last time?
Yes.
I think we should do that. And so they offer the sword, but Taran turns him down and says he will trade the evil cauldron for Gurgi back. And so
they're mysteriously able to bring people back from the dead.
Yeah, they're kind of like in a huff, and like, well, you can't do that. And so then the minstrel challenges their power to, like, oh, so you really don't have any power at all. And, like, well, okay, then here you go. It just, a little bit of teasing is all it takes to get a witch to do whatever you want.
Apparently. And
everybody's, yes. Everybody comes back to life, and there's a nice little happy frolicking off into the sunset thing where they're going home, and we see the old man from the beginning.
Oh, and the bobble doesn't get to come. Nope. Well, no bobble happiness.
It didn't flip by the end.
Nope.
Well, it's so this is the first movie where there's no the end at the end.
No,
it's just kind of a fade away and then credits.
Yep.
So really nice credits.
Okay, by the way. There's a shot of Penman at the end.
We do see them, and the old man from the beginning.
That's good.
Is okay.
Because I was seriously concerned about the well-being of that pig.
Well, so this is the first movie since Snow White that had completed scenes cut prior to the release. And I'm assuming that's all for trying to keep it into a PG rating.
Cut out some but, creepy.
Yeah, but, you know, so much of what we've been talking about is where this part doesn't make that much sense. And that part feels like something's missing.
Yeah.
And so I'm really curious as to what was cut out, what story elements at least were cut from the movie. And, you know, it's a thing where I don't know if we'll ever see all of it, because if it was at one point rated R, you know, I'm not sure Disney has any interest in putting that out there for the world.
Probably not.
So, but I don't know, you know, what's missing, because it does,
I don't know.
There are several parts in the movie where it feels like something is missing, and so I'm really curious if those solve that or not.
I don't know. I liked this movie, and I really love these books, but I felt like some of the stuff that they left in should have been cut out, and some of the stuff they cut out probably should have been left in, whatever it was, because the, like, general plot was fine, but there was a lot of unnecessary, like, oh, introducing other characters that will be there for 10 minutes and then leave, that I felt was just frustrating and, like, not worth our time when we could be, you know, like, making it seem like these people are building relationships. That would have been nice.
So much of it is, it's a good movie, and it's a good story, and it does feel, in several parts, very grand and epic.
Yes.
But then there are these times that somewhat undercut that, because it feels like such a little a fumble on a character, or a fumble on a little moment, which, you know, in a with the rest of the movie feeling so grand, it's jarring.
Yeah. The animation was really good, though. I was very impressed. Especially the creepy scenes were really, really well animated.
Yes, they very much were. And I don't know how much intentional creepiness there was in this movie, you know, but they had to know they were not making Snow White this time around. Like, it was intensely creepy.
Yeah.
So, a well-deserved PG rating.
Yes. I mean, I definitely wouldn't say this is one of my favorites, and it's mostly just because, while it's not a bad movie, when you compare it to so many other Disney films, it just falls really short of what they're good at. And that's kind of upsetting to me, because I love the source material, so I hope that it would be better than I think it is now.
Well, it's really interesting. This is kind of considered, you know, this period, time period as a whole, and then this movie specifically is often considered to be like the lowest point of Disney movies after
Disney
this golden
Dark
age. and before the Renaissance come along. And it's curious to me, because this movie was in production, or they wanted to make this movie
for such
a long time, what it would have been like much earlier or much later, if, you know, never gotten around to this, and right after Lion King or something, if they decided they wanted to try for a Black Cauldron movie again.
Yeah. Or, you know, without so much turmoil at the studio. I feel like this movie really reflects how many problems were happening in the studio at this time.
Yeah.
Because it does feel not as organized as a lot of the other movies. It does feel kind of haphazard.
It feels like this movie kind of drew the short end of the straw.
Which sucks.
So, it's a shame it happened to this movie, because a lot of potential still exists in this movie. You can see how good of a movie this could have been, because it still is a good movie.
Yeah.
Just not up to some of the other ones we've seen.
Yep.
So, that's Black Cauldron, then.
Yep.
Next week will be The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah.
So, look forward to that one. Maybe a little bit of a lighter movie. Though still terrifying in some cases.
Still creepy, but I think a little more delightful.
Yes. So, next time, Great Mouse Detective.
Yep.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.